Bloody hell. Another international event and King Barrett lets down the British Empire once more. Good grief. You're listening to Solar Monster Sounds Off. Boom!
You know what, Bree? I figured it out. I know exactly what you're trying to do. Oh, my gosh. You deleted my text that Daniel sent me.
I deleted your text.
Oh, do I really wish?
Yeah,
I know, Brianna, just like Betty Peacock from 2005.
Oh, my God. Really?
No! My pants! No! 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 My pants! 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 No! 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 My pants! No! My pants! No! My pants! No!
It's business time, baby.
The Solar Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the streak.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Credit to the Atom Bomb X1 on YouTube for that remix there at the end. That was Derek Bateman back when he once double dated the Bella Twins with Daniel Bryan on an episode of NXT, and Nikki spilled champagne on his pants. And now he's the TNA World Heavyweight Champion with no pants. So congrats to EC3, one of the few bright spots on TNA these days. I have to admit, I didn't watch that stuff when it originally aired on NXT back in the day, back when NXT was something completely different. But I got to go back and watch a lot of his old stuff as Derek Bateman this weekend. I cannot understand how WWE let this guy go, but yet they kept guys like Byron Saxton and Conor O'Brien from the same season of NXT. He had to have pissed in someone's cornflakes, I'm convinced of this. It just doesn't make any sense. Even if his wrestling wasn't that great, it's not like Conor from The Ascension was such a better wrestler than him, or has such an outgoing personality more than he did. What does Conor have that Bateman didn't? Bateman had a good physique. The dude was oozing charisma. I just don't get it. This is episode 390 of the Solar Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, July 5th, 2015. I am the Solar Monster. Hope everybody had a great 4th of July. I watched almost 12 hours of wrestling this week. And then I see Mike Quackenbush on Reddit teasing some sort of Chikara Pro show coming soon on Wednesdays. My DVR can only take so much. I don't think my DVR could take much more of this. Actually, it may just be some sort of streaming show, maybe on YouTube or something. He didn't really say. But that's a lot of wrestling for one night. Audible is still offering listeners of The Sound Off a free audiobook of your choice, along with a 30-day trial membership of the service. Just go to audibletrial.com/solarmonster. You can pick from over 180,000 titles, many of which are wrestling-related. I've mentioned in recent weeks the Dusty Rhodes book. Everybody was on a Dusty Rhodes kick. They're going to have another live Dusty Rhodes special after Raw this Monday. He came out with a book many years ago, so you can cash in your free audio book if you want to hear some Dusty stories. Hulk Hogan's book, Lex Luger's book. I hear there's a book on the Junkyard Dog as well. Lots of books you can choose from. Chris Jericho's most recent book, in fact, which I highly recommend. Shawn Michaels' book. So whatever you're interested in, just punch in our URL, audibletrial.com/solarmonster. You have to go through the sign-up process, otherwise none of this matters. And once you are signed up for the trial, you can then cash in your free audiobook. And even if you cancel the trial the day after, doesn't matter. Once you get your free book, it belongs to you no matter what. audibletrial.com/solarmonster. And also you can check out our Pro Wrestling Tees store at prowrestlingtees.com/solarmonster. Sounds off 20 different t-shirts to choose from, up to size 5XL. On all of our shirts, and they ship all over the world, so please support The Sound Off by sporting a shirt. And if you like what you hear each and every week, you can also make a PayPal donation on thesolemonster.com. The PayPal box is always on the right-hand side of the page. It is parked there at all times if at any point you feel compelled to make a donation to the show. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname. $30 or more will get you a nickname, shout-out, And a shout out for your podcast or YouTube channel. Just make sure you include the information when you make your donation. Thank you this week to Sean Nasty Boy Nilsson, Ladies Man Levi Daly, Beast Mode Brock Joseph, Jerry Flapjack Flores, Deadpool James Herrera, The Bogota Big Shot Fernando Leon, Atomic Drop Aaron Murray, Matt Game Over Gafurta, Out of Control Cody Thomas, Rashid the Reaper Al Rumahi, Craig Pitbull Brown, Guilty as Charged Mark Court, Cutthroat Charles McIntyre, The Florida Freebird Bryant Becerra, Masked Mayhem Javier Mitchell, Ben the Blaze Salmon, Paul Knockout Nielsen, Craig Heart Attack Hadley, The Master of Disaster Ellie Day, The Last Outlaw Andrew Gelinas. You could check out valiantvision.podbean.com, which is it's a podcast channel is what it is on Podbean, as well as Stitcher Radio. It features shows like Sports with Van, Wrestling with Valiance, and Honey, We Shrunk the Podcast. So you can find them on Facebook as well by searching Valiant Vision. And finally, my thanks to Tarkin Danger Zone Davis, who hosts a podcast on Podbean as well called Gaming with the Shark. Every Saturday night, talking video games, reviewing video games from the sick, demented, twisted mind of Tark the Shark. So check him out. Thank you to everybody who made a donation. I really appreciate it. That is still the most direct way to support this podcast, and I appreciate it very much. We have some breaking news here, though, before we begin. I can now report that Bram has signed a new multi-year contract with TNA. This comes only months after his last multi-year contract. They're losing talent faster than the Knicks in the NBA draft, but TNA fans can rest easy because Bram is staying put, unlike all those other guys. So that comes courtesy of @TNA Breaking News on Twitter. If we have any more breaking news during the show, I'll be sure to break in here. I said last week I watched Tough Enough, the premiere, and I wasn't really impressed. I did see the first two Tough Talk episodes with The Miz. They also have them up on the WWE YouTube channel if you don't have the network, which is free, yet again, for new subscribers in the month of July, by the way. Two episodes in, and I enjoy Tough Talk more than I do Tough Enough. No joke. I enjoy the post-show where they talk to everybody more than the actual show itself. And credit where credit is due, I think Miz is awesome on that show. They should have let him host Tough Enough. You know, plus, he's a former Tough Enough alum, so it would kind of make sense to have him in there as the host. The other thing I love about Tough Talk is how all the contestants, well, not all of them, but a lot of them, just completely out the show as being fake. Someone comes off like a bitch on the show, and nobody likes her, and then on Tough Talk, she's like, I'm just playing to the cameras. That's not really who I am. We all get along just fine. So they totally expose the show as being like every other reality show on TV. We get more reality on the wrap-up show than we do on the so-called reality show. So if you're not sold on Tough Enough, give Tough Talk a shot. I think you might like that better. And Miz is great on there. The Beast in the East show from Tokyo, Japan took place yesterday morning on the WWE Network. I really enjoyed the show. I did not watch it live. I watched it a few hours later. I just stayed the hell off Twitter and Facebook for a few hours, which is my advice to the people who complain about being spoiled. And I saw a bunch of people complaining about this, not just in our group and on Twitter, but in other places. I always laugh when people get hot about that. You know, I went on Twitter or I went on Facebook and someone spoiled it for me. No shit! Stay the hell off social media. It's your own fault. You're expecting people on the internet to be nice and think before they post something? You clearly don't know how this internet thing works. I mean, you know, I kept my tweets very vague as I was watching the show because I figured, yeah, there were people who hadn't watched it yet. But I also have, you know, thousands of people who follow my account, so I try to be considerate about stuff like that. I've had things spoiled for me plenty of times. It sucks. But I didn't cry about it. I did the smart thing, which is stay off. Stay offline. If I had to hop on like Facebook for some reason, I avert my eyes away from the timeline and click onto a different tab before I do whatever it is I have to do. This isn't difficult. You know, it's like once the show airs live, it's fair game. Or even if it's not live, if it's taped. But once it airs, it's fair game. There isn't much that can be done. You know, shows that are taped in advance and they haven't aired yet, you know, that's a different story. But if it's already aired, you have to assume people are going to talk about it. Otherwise, you're just being naive. So I always laugh when people get so upset. Oh, you people are so inconsiderate. No shit, it's the internet. You should be smarter than that. Props to Michael Cole and Byron Saxton. I thought they did a good job. It's amazing what happens when you don't have the 70-year-old Irish madmen yelling things in your ear. We had references, I tried to count this, we had references at different points in the show on commentary to FMW, Dragon Gate, the Super Juniors, Prince Devitt, and I know they've mentioned, you know, Prince Devitt on, in like the NXT package on him and stuff, but it's still weird to hear them acknowledge that on commentary. And Brock Lesnar as being the IWGP champion once upon a time for New Japan. Cole did botch the hell out of Bull Nakano's name. I think he called her Bull Nakona. And he also botched up Tatsumi Fujinami's name at one point. But, you know, I'll give him a pass on that. Cesaro beat Diego and the Lucha Dragons beat New Day. Those are the only two matches that did not air. The show actually opened, the broadcast did, with Jericho and Neville. They had an awesome match as I sat there munching away on my breakfast. A bowl of Golden Grahams and Honey Nut Cheerios, for those of you who may be interested in what a real breakfast of champions looks like. I was shocked that Jericho won, I gotta tell you. I would not have expected that, but I have no problem with it. You know, he won with the old school Lion Tamer. Cole even called it by that name. Neville tapped out. Just a great match. I saw some people upset. Oh, why did Jericho have to win? You know, yeah. I mean, look, and I say the same thing about the main event. Airing, you know, at the end of the show, when it did. This was a house show. This was not a show designed for you and me. This was a show designed for the people who paid a ticket in Japan to go see the show, because they don't go to Japan very often. It was a house show that got converted into a televised event. And so Jericho, I believe Jericho lost the night before to Finn Balor. That would have made even less sense, given that Balor was challenging for the championship the next night. So Balor did beat Jericho. And you know what? Jericho's got to win one every now and then. The guy can't just lose all the time. So, you know, the people who are, like, making such a big deal about this, like, oh my God, they buried Neville. Like, just shut up. Oh, I saw a few people throw that word bury around. I wanted to just, like, crack their skull open. It's like, just shut up. It's not a big deal. I thought it was a great match. Nikki Bella retained her Divas title over Paige and Tamina. Tamina was subbing for Naomi, who tweeted that she was dealing with the loss of a family member, so thoughts are with her. The only thing I'll say about the Divas match, they tried hard. They had like one Tower of Doom superplex spot at one point where Paige got suplexed off the top rope. There was just so much loud spot calling here. You know, there was a fan in the crowd that was holding up a sign that said, "I'm deaf." And in case you couldn't read it, he actually had a visual aid. There was an illustration on the sign, a picture of an ear, I think, with like an X over it. As if you couldn't understand what he was saying when he said, "I'm deaf." Even the deaf guy could hear the spot calling in this match. And then it was time for the Beast. It took less than 3 minutes for Brock Lesnar to murder Kofi Kingston. You know, at least he didn't suffer. It was over quickly. Kofi got a lot of offense on Brock Lesnar, just completely no-sold everything he did. And then grabbed him, gave him a series of German suplexes, finished him off with an F5, gave him another German after the match just for fun. Xavier Woods and Big E ran out for the save. They each got F5s of their own for their trouble. Lesnar probably got himself a nice big steak at Ribera Steakhouse after the show and was on the first flight back to the States. He'll be on Raw this Monday. Kevin Owens and Finn Balor for the NXT Championship. I think it should have ended the show, but John Cena was the draw, so I get it. I understand. Tons of people dressed like John Cena in the crowd, too. It was kind of creepy. Balor did the full demon entrance, was showered in streamers during the ring intros. That was an awesome visual. I never thought I'd see the day we'd see streamers in WWE. I do wonder if the fans are going to start to catch on, and we'll start to see them stateside, maybe at NXT shows at least. They didn't seem to know what to do with the streamers either, because when they finally cleaned them all out of the ring, they left them in a big pile on the outside instead of just sweeping them under the ring. I thought these two had an excellent match. I think I may have liked Jericho and Neville a little bit more, but this was really good stuff. When Owens was climbing up to the top rope at one point for a senton, and he grabbed Balor's demon headdress and he threw it down on the floor. I was so disappointed. I so badly was hoping that he would just put it on his own head to mock Balor. Just imagine the sight of Kevin Owens wearing Finn Balor's demon headgear. So Balor won clean with the second coup de grace, took two of them off the top rope, and Finn Balor is your new NXT champion. WWE Hall of Famer Tatsumi Fujinami came out to raise Balor's hand after the match. They showed Hideo Itami sitting in the crowd. You had to know he was just sitting there thinking, that should have been me. He even had a look on his face, almost of like disappointment. And it would have been him. It would have been him had he not gotten hurt, but them's are the breaks sometimes. They ended with John Cena and Dolph Ziggler beating Kane and King Barrett. Match went 20 minutes. Total house show main event. But like I said earlier, this was a house show before they decided to convert it to a network special. This was not a show for you and me. This was a show for the people over there. So let's not forget that. And Barrett, you know, Barrett's a total loser on TV, but I figured they know that and they wanted to throw him a bone by giving him a main event match in Japan. I'm sure it was a thrill for him. So I'm happy for the guy. Of course, he ate the pin from Cena at the end, and that was that. They did technically end the show with Balor. They showed a replay of him walking out with the NXT title, so that was a nice touch. What I also loved about the show, besides no JBL on commentary and no stupid backstage skits, no interviews. I mean, I wouldn't have minded pre- and post-match promos, but they had none of that. It was just pure action. But what I also loved about the show was the fact that they saved all of their replays for after the matches. They gave us highlight packages at the end, like WCW used to do on Nitro back in the day. They didn't constantly interrupt the matches with replays as the matches were going on. And I just think it was such a breath of fresh air to see that. I hope that they start to adopt that on their shows back home here. Hopefully we get that more often. It's just so much better that way, you know. Just watch the match uninterrupted, and when the match is over, you give us highlights of the best spots from the whole match. That's how you should do it. So hopefully we get more of these kind of shows. I wouldn't mind seeing them go back to the Royal Albert Hall in London for a show. They did a show there back in 91. That was the one where the British Bulldog won a big battle royal. He won that trophy. What was the name of the trophy he won? Samovar. I don't even know what that means. But anyway, that was, I think, the only time they ever did a show there, or at least a televised show. And it's a different setting for a wrestling show. I don't know if Royal Albert Hall looks much different now than it did 20 years ago. It's an intimate setting. It's a theater. It's a theater you would expect to go to see a play. It only fits, I think, about 5,000 or 6,000. I was looking it up earlier. So maybe it would be better for like an NXT show if they ever want to take an NXT show overseas for the first time. But either way, I'd love to see them do one of these shows in front of a UK crowd. And that's the beauty of the network, is that they can do whatever they want. They can take shows all over the world, whether it's, you know, WWE show, NXT show, make it a network exclusive. They can go to a big venue, a small venue. I like the smaller, intimate venues. I just think you're likely more likely to have a hotter crowd that way, especially if it looks all packed. So this was really cool, and hopefully they'll do more of these. Monday Night Raw this past week was live from Washington, D.C. Raw did its lowest rating of the year, 3.4 million viewers, which is also its lowest non-holiday rating in 3 years. And before that, you'd need to go all the way back to 1997 to find a number that low, which, ironically, 1997 was a year where WWE came close to bankruptcy before they turned their business around. But, you know, this was bound to happen. This is what happens when you put on boring shows, the same matches, week after week after week. And the three-hour format doesn't help. And by the way, it looks like that two-hour Raw replay was a one-week thing. They did it to try to boost the rating for Tough Enough, and it did not work. So it's already gone. But if they're not willing to shake things up, bring up a few more NXT guys, overhaul the Divas division, start taking that more seriously, just, you know, do something. Do anything to make the show feel fresh, to make the show feel can't miss again. Okay, if they can't do that, if the old man is so stuck in his ways, then 3 hours is going to be the death of them. Because people don't want to see 3 hours of this stuff. They don't want to see half an hour of really good stuff, like one great match, and then 2.5 hours of shit. if they had an exciting show, you know, like if the product was as hot as it was in the late 90s, or if the product was as great as it was during those SmackDown years from like 02 to 03, if they had a hot product, 3 hours might not be so bad. But look at the show they put out on most weeks. Why do you think when I rank all the shows week to week, Raw is consistently at the bottom of the heap? Lucha Underground, Ring of Honor, NXT, yeah, even TNA sometimes, all consistently ranked above what is supposed to be the flagship, right? That's what they call Raw. Raw's the flagship. Well, guess what? The flagship has a hole in it. You need to patch that shit up and patch it up quick. This week's show, we did have one great match. John Cena and Cesaro tore the frickin' house down. The U.S. title open challenge continues to be the best thing about Raw every single week. I thought we might get Finn Balor challenging John Cena for the championship and having Kevin Owens cost Balor the match to put some heat on their NXT match in Japan, but I have no complaints with them choosing Cesaro. They went over 20 minutes, tons of near falls, tons of kicking out of each other's big moves, which has become a staple of many John Cena matches. But it didn't make the match any less fun, at least not for me. For every dead crowd we've gotten over the last few months, it was so nice to have one that actually made noise for a change. I thought DC was awesome. I say give those people a pay-per-view. Kevin Owens sat in on commentary, which just made it even better. Cena gave Cesaro everything. Cesaro was on offense the majority of the match, and I just thought he knocked it out of the park. I mean, at one point, he flipped Cena off with his ring fingers, and USA Network blacked out the screen so we couldn't see it, which I think is just completely ridiculous. And I'm assuming it was USA that did that and not WWE, because on other feeds, people were saying that it wasn't blacked out, only on the USA feed. So that's just dumb. He gave Cena the giant swing into a sharpshooter. Owens ran in. He attacked Cesaro from behind for the DQ. Told the world that if anybody was going to beat Cena for the championship, it was going to be him. And so Cesaro gets a win over John Cena by DQ, much the same way that Neville did back when Rusev interfered that one time. Actually, this was the exact same situation now that I think about it. And Neville went right back to the mid-card, which is where I suspect Cesaro will be back to this week, if he's even on TV at all. Yeah, it's funny. I actually had a whole conversation with my friend at the gym the other day about this match. He loved it. He absolutely loved this match. And he's a casual fan, so he's a different beast from myself and probably most of the people listening to the show right now. He's not hung up on, you know, work rate. You know, he probably thinks Ring of Honor is something you buy your girlfriend at a jewelry store. And he's a big fan of John Cena, but he was blown away by Cesaro here in this match. I took out my phone later. I tried to get him to repeat what he had said to me earlier. He gave this like impassioned speech about how great this match was and how he got so wrapped up in it. So I took my phone out. I said, "Hey, can you say that again?" He couldn't quite recapture the magic of his little speech there, but I just want to play here for you what he said.
But what'd you think about that match on Monday?
Match on Monday was match of the year on Raw. I got so into the match. I'm 32 years old, married, but I know it's fake, know it's set up, and I got so into it that I couldn't believe that he wasn't pinning John Cena.
Yeah. But you were really big into, you like Cena, but you were really big into Cesaro more than anything else.
I like Cena. I like what he does. I like what he stands for. But I was all about Cesaro in that match. I wanted to see Cena get swung.
You were telling me, though, you wish you could see more of Cesaro doing that.
I want to see more of Cesaro. I don't understand why he's not on TV. I think they don't know what to do with him, so they throw him in a match with Cena, and he stole the show.
I wish I could have recorded what he said the first time, because it was so great. Just about how he knows it's all fixed, but he bought into all the near falls, and he got so frustrated with Cena. Just stay down for the pin, which I think is a feeling we all share in frustration in many John Cena matches. But I thought it would be interesting just to share that perspective from a casual viewer who knows nothing of Cesaro as an indie darling. He's just impressed by how frickin' strong the dude is and how he always goes out there and has great matches. And he can't understand why he isn't being featured more on TV. And as I explained to him, clearly the man is Swiss, and so therefore he doesn't connect with the crowd. That's clearly what it must be. But anyway, this was one of the best Raw matches of the year. Cesaro was outstanding. John Cena more than held his own. He was very good. The two of them worked very well together. The only black mark on the entire match, besides the non-finish, which, you know what, I can't knock it because they could have just had Cena beat Cesaro clean in the middle like he does most everybody else, and they didn't do that. So I'm not going to fault them for that. It was actually a fuck finish that worked. The one lone stain on the match, and it's a stain on every match that John Cena is in, is that horrendous springboard stunner. He has to stop using it. He must find another move to use. I appreciate the fact that he's looking for a new move. Find another one. Come up with something else. It never looks good. This was probably the worst that it's ever looked, because he missed Cesaro's head on the way down. Cesaro sold for it anyway, but it reminded me of that Phantom Stunner bump that Tim White once took from Steve Austin. It looked like Austin was stunning a ghost. I think it was on Sunday Night Heat. This was the only time I groaned this entire match. It was because of that one awful move, and he just has to let it go. Just let it go. Seth Rollins opened the show. He was showering Kane. Actually, let me rephrase that. He was bestowing upon Kane. There we go. I didn't like the way that sounded. Kane and J&J with gifts for sticking by him the week before and helping him take out Brock Lesnar, who was not on the show, we were told, because he was already on his way to Japan, apparently 5 days in advance. He gave all three of them brand new Apple Watches, so now they can unnecessarily type emails on their wrist and measure their heartbeat. Who wouldn't want to spend $400 to do that? This was the first sign of product placement in this segment. It would not be the last. He then praised Kane and said that he debuted in 1997. And after all those years, he was going to send him on his first real vacation to Hawaii and outwalk some hula dancers. All I know is they better send Kane to an island somewhere, whether it's Hawaii or not. I don't care. I don't care if it's really Hawaii. It doesn't even matter. And film some vignettes to air on TV. Maybe they did in Japan. Maybe they tried to kind of film something in like on a beach in Japan to make it seem like he was in Hawaii, and they're going to air it on TV. Because I think that could be comedy gold. Not that typical Photoshop bullshit they normally do. I don't want to see that. I want to see Kane on a beach getting laid. You know, they put the lays on you in Hawaii. You know, the lays. Anyway. Rollins unveiled a brand new Cadillac for J&J, which I thought for sure would end up destroyed. I still think it will be, maybe tomorrow night, or maybe a battleground. This was the second bit of product placement, by the way, during this segment. All I know is this has to end with Brock turning that car into scrap metal. Which reminds me of when Goldberg turned Sid's car into a pancake on Nitro that one time, and the visual of Sid hopping up and down on what used to be his car, shouting Goldberg's name and screaming, "Why me? Why me?" Which is actually a reenactment of me by the time Raw goes off the air each week. Main event was Roman Reigns and Dean Ambrose against Rollins and Kane. No DQ tag team match. Don't you just love no DQ tag team matches where the wrestlers still stand on the apron waiting for the hot tag from their partner? These guys are some real sticklers for rules and regulations. Best part of this was Roman Reigns running wild on all the heels. He got his hands on a kendo stick, started whipping everybody with it. Superman punch for Kane, Superman punch for Mercury, Superman punch to Rollins in midair as he came off the top rope. The guy was just a house of fire. The crowd was going apeshit for him. About as over in front of a crowd as I've seen Roman Reigns since the Royal Rumble. He was about to hit the spear when suddenly the lights went out, and with it died all of his momentum. It was Bray Wyatt. He laid Reigns out with a rock bottom on the announce desk. Inside, Ambrose got chokeslammed by Hawaiian Kane and pedigreed by Rollins for the win. After the match, Reigns tried to make this heroic comeback, but he got beaten down and beaten down and beaten down and beaten down some more. This went way too long. They propped up a table in the corner. Rollins powerbombed Reigns through it. That still wasn't enough. He ended up getting the pedigree, and finally he was out. I don't know what happened to Ambrose. Wyatt then walked back out and gave Reigns a Sister Abigail to end the show. This show also had a really good Divas match, I thought, between Paige and Alicia Fox. It was cool to see the crowd into it. They gave it a lot of time, close to 10 minutes. Paige won with a distraction roll-up. First one of those we've gotten in a few weeks. And then we were told, the last little thing I want to talk about here from Raw, I know I'm going out of order, but I'm just talking about the stuff that mattered. We were told that Dolph Ziggler and Lana were going public, which involved Dolph admitting that at the beginning, Lana was just using him to get back at Rusev, and that he was cool with it because, hey, she's hot. Which may well be true, but it was at that moment I suddenly realized that this man will never be WWE champion. You cannot have a WWE champion who admits to being such a dweeb in such gleeful fashion on TV. You could say, look, say what you want to about Daniel Bryan, but at least he was once involved in a storyline where all the women on the roster wanted his love noodle. That was actually when he and Brie first started getting real close in real life, which also goes to show you why Rusev probably insisted on staying on the road instead of staying home to heal up from his injury, because the guy's no dummy. He's no dummy. He knows how these things turn out. Lana started talking. The crowd gave her the what treatment, and I hate that chant with every fiber of my being, but if ever there was a segment that deserved it, it was this one. This was just bad. This was bad, except the one sign in the crowd that said Lana backwards, which I laughed at because I'm 12 years old. Rusev came out to a pop from the crowd, first time I've heard Rusev get anything resembling a babyface reaction. But it gets better. So Rusev, he tries to no-sell it, like it doesn't bother him that Dolph and Lana are together. He says, oh, kissing Lana would be like kissing the ring post. He's basically like any guy who lost his girl to somebody else and now is trying to pretend like it doesn't bother him, when you know, of course, it does. Of course, he'd like nothing more than to rip Dolph's head off and jam it up his own ass. People can empathize with Rusev. I think they can relate to that. Dolph starts mocking him, tells him to leave or else he'll take out his one good leg. And as I'm listening to this, I'm sitting here wondering to myself, who exactly is supposed to be the heel and who exactly is supposed to be the babyface in all this? I think it was Wrestling Inc. on their Twitter account asked the question, have any of these writers ever had a girlfriend? The answer is no. The answer is always no. They haven't. Summer Rae was out there with Rusev. I guess he's traded in one blonde for another. She got on the mic and admitted that Rusev really did care for her, and she, being Lana, was just a gold digger who dumped him after WrestleMania. This resulted in Summer slapping Lana, and for the first time, Lana got physical, and she tackled Summer to the mat. We had a little catfight action going on. Lana's hair also was not in a bun for the first time that I can recall on TV. Oh, wait. What is this? I've just gotten word. Yes, Bram has in fact just re-signed with TNA. It is a brand new multi-year deal. This news comes from at TNA Breaking News and has been confirmed by John Gaborik. Bram has re-signed. Thank God. Guy deserved a new deal. Anyway, where was I? So, what happened here? What happened here? Judging by the crowd reactions, the fans are not buying into this Ziggler-Lana nonsense. And really, who could blame them? This whole thing is terrible. All it's doing is creating sympathy for Rusev. So, I look at this and I say to myself, self, what would be the best possible outcome here? How can we salvage this? What would benefit all the parties involved while keeping Lana as the babyface that Vince McMahon wants her to be? Because Lana has lost a lot of steam over the last 4 weeks. I don't think anybody will deny that. And in my opinion, the answer is a double turn. The last double turn we saw on WWE TV, ironically, also involved Dolph Ziggler. It was a payback a couple of years back with him and Alberto Del Rio. People wanted to cheer for Ziggler. They respected his work. And Alberto was a flop as a babyface, so the turn made sense. People still respect Ziggler's work, but the way they book him, I sense that people are starting to really cool off on him because they see, you know, he's never going to get above a certain level. And they're kind of getting tired of Dolph Ziggler. They had one chance to make this guy a real star after Survivor Series when he won that elimination match. And they blew it. They blew it because they never even intended to give him a real push. He was only in that spot because Roman Reigns was still out recovering from a hernia. And so now we're starting to see this, what I call Ziggler fatigue. And to be honest, he comes out, he's kind of a dick. It wouldn't be that hard to get people to boo him. Lana had this look on her face during the segment like she still had feelings for Rusev. It would not be hard to pull this off. I don't know when Rusev is going to be cleared to come back, but I would try to set something up for SummerSlam, either a singles match between him and Dolph or a mixed tag match with Rusev and Summer against Dolph and Lana, and they could hype it up as Lana's first match, and they could do the turn there. Dolph's already admitted that Lana used him, so Dolph can turn the tables on her, ends up with Summer Rae, which gives Dolph a new valet and gives Summer something to do. And that leaves Rusev and Lana to get back together, to mend fences. This time they could be a babyface pair. He's learned the error of his ways. No more America Crush. Now it's Dolph Crush. That would at least make things interesting. Right now, this stuff isn't getting anybody over. All it's doing is killing Lana, and it's making Rusev look like a giant puss. I've watched the first two episodes of that new Swerve show, by the way. They aired the second one after Raw last Monday. I liked it. It's mindless comedy. I wasn't into the farting stuff on the last one. I'm sure Vince McMahon tore his frickin' ab muscles off the bone laughing at that. That's right up his alley. But I'm not into the toilet humor so much. I did enjoy the look of sheer terror on Kane's face when that old lady kept propositioning him. He looked very uncomfortable. So if you've got 20 minutes, I don't even think it's a full half hour. If you have 20 minutes, the stupid toilet humor aside, there's actually some pretty funny stuff on the show. You see guys out of their element. Guys get to be themselves, which actually makes them come across more likable than it does on the main shows. So if you've completely avoided the show at all costs because you thought it sucked, you may still think it sucks. Watch it once. You may get a kick out of it. If not, then you never have to watch it again.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
The next NXT TakeOver has been announced for the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, New York, August 22nd, the night before SummerSlam, which takes place in the same building. Not only that, Raw that Monday is also at the Barclays Center, so that's three straight nights of WWE shows in the same venue. I'm sure their production crew is going to love that. Makes their jobs a hell of a lot easier. Wouldn't that be something, though, if NXT TakeOver outshines SummerSlam in the same building? Judging by the quality of all their past TakeOver shows, I would wager there's a pretty damn good chance that may happen. This is pretty freaking cool, I gotta say. I can dig NXT in my backyard. I got no complaints about that. Obviously, I'm hoping on being there. Take my brother with me, maybe. He's never been to an NXT show before. Or I should say, I'm going to try. I didn't have a lot of luck when I tried for SummerSlam tickets. I got shut out, so hopefully I don't run into the same problems with Ticketmaster that I did last time. This will be a TakeOver special, so it will air live on the WWE Network. This is not a house show. If it was, I really think they would have done this at the Manhattan Center and the Hammerstein Ballroom, but once they got the idea of making it a live special, my guess is they likely ruled it out. I don't think they look at that venue as being very TV-friendly. I don't think they like running in that venue for TV. I'm a little bummed they're not doing it there, just because with an intimate crowd like that, I think it would have made for an incredible atmosphere. I wonder how much of that might be lost by doing it in a building of that size. But you know what? All it means is that more people are going to get to go, so it's all good. I'm hearing they're going to set it up for about 5,000 people. What's interesting is that they opted to do it on Saturday and not Friday. The Barclays calendar has no events listed for Friday, so they could have done it on that day if they wanted to and left Saturday for the ROH show, which now runs head-to-head with them in Brooklyn at MCU Park, which is a minor league baseball stadium. It's right on the beach in Coney Island, fits 7,500 people in there, and a lot more than that with standing room only. It's a very nice ballpark. They've hosted TNA shows there before. I've been there numerous times. This will be the second or third, I think, ROH show in MCU Park. And from what I understand, ticket sales for the ROH show have not been going so well. I know they just added Okada and Nakamura recently from New Japan to the lineup. They're going to really try to stack that show. And by the way, for all the people who have asked me about these rumors of Nakamura and Okada getting tryouts for WWE when they were in Japan this past weekend, I can't say that it's not true, but I have not seen any reliable sources saying that it is. So right now, I call bullshit until I hear it from some greater authority. It just doesn't make sense to me, especially with New Japan having gone into a big show this weekend, that Dominion show, which I've heard was freaking awesome, and I hope I get to see at some point. Right now, I would take that with a very heavy grain of salt. I don't buy into it. But I know ROH also wanted Samoa Joe on that show. That was before Joe signed a full-time deal with NXT. They were really hoping to get him on that Brooklyn show. Now it looks like Joe could end up headlining that night, but against ROH. And don't think that's a coincidence, because it's not. That didn't happen by accident. It sucks for those people, though, who already bought tickets to the ROH show and they want to go to NXT. I know a lot of people who are very pissed off about that, and they have to make a decision now what they want to do. Do they give up their tickets and go to NXT, try to sell their tickets? Do they just stick with it and then miss out on the NXT show? There's a lot of very upset people right now. But had they booked the show for Friday, everybody wins. But WWE doesn't want everybody to win. So, you know, they want to win themselves. And so anyway, tickets go on sale at noon on Saturday, July 18th. All I ask is that they save the first tag team title win for Kaz and Enzo for that show. If they do that, the place will go nuts. I guarantee it. It'll be a great moment if they finally win the tag team titles in Brooklyn on that show. Before we get to some very quick NXT thoughts on the show this week, I have to mention this. Superstar Billy Graham is at it again. This time he is lobbying Vince McMahon and WWE to replace Dusty Rhodes and make him the new promo coach at NXT. Now, nobody is going to doubt that in his heyday, Billy Graham was one of the best promo men in all of wrestling, if not the best. Okay, tons of guys have ripped him off. Hulk Hogan ripped him off. Jesse Ventura ripped him off. Both of them got much of their shtick from Billy Graham. That's a fact. The way he talked, the way he dressed. So, could he be an asset to NXT? Of course, sure, he could be. But he shouldn't be. I find it laughable that after all the mud that this guy has slung at WWE and making a spectacle a few years back of selling his Hall of Fame ring, which I think he did, and demanding that WWE remove him from their Hall of Fame because Abdullah the Butcher is in the Hall of Fame, so I don't want to be in the same Hall of Fame. And even before that, when they cut him from their payroll, they had Billy Graham on their payroll after they mended fences and everything, and they cut him because they had no use for him anymore. Maybe they were like budget cuts, whatever it was. And he turned on them. The guy was getting a free paycheck from the company for doing nothing, and he turned on them again. He talked about what an awful organization they were. Like a sugar daddy cutting off his girlfriend and the girlfriend throwing a fit about it. And so now here he is begging Vince McMahon for a job. This is some of what he wrote on his Facebook page. I just want to read some of this here. He said, "With all the rumors going around about my interest concerning a position with NXT that my dear friend Dusty Rhodes had, I thought it was necessary to give you a direct statement from me to set the record straight. First off, I have been planning to move back to Florida for some time now. My wife of 35 years is from Tampa. All of her family lives there. This morning, Tuesday, June 30th, 2015, I sent an email directly to Vince McMahon informing him that if the position that Dusty once had has not yet been filled, that I am very much interested in taking it since I am moving back to live in Florida. I have not heard back from Vince or any of his staff, as he is a very busy man. I am sure at some point I will get an answer from Vince concerning this question. About my qualifications for this position, it should be obvious that I am qualified for the NXT position of coaching the younger talent about how to do promos and communicate with the worldwide WWE TV wrestling audience. I am not so stupid that I would try to teach them how to be charismatic to the level of a Dusty Rhodes or myself. One is born with that level of charisma. But a younger wrestler can be taught to be more confident in their delivery and bring out their full potential in this area." This guy has got some brass balls, let me tell you. I hope they ignore him. Don't even email him back. Don't give him the satisfaction. Give the job to somebody who actually deserves it. This guy deserves nothing from them. Just some of the things he's had to say before, it's so inflammatory and just, ugh. I can't stand the guy. They aired the third part of the Finn Balor video package on this show. It was great. They actually combined all three parts into a half-hour special on the network. If you haven't seen it, get on there and check it out. Bull Dempsey was fighting with a vending machine and losing. William Regal sat him down and noticed some chocolate smeared all over his mouth. Either that or shit. He was probably eating shit. Regal told him to sort himself out or else the next time he would not like the outcome. And I don't care what anybody says, I still get a kick out of this. Bull Dempsey's going to come out of this as a big baby face, I'm telling you right now. He's going to come out of this better than he was before. Which, after Baron Corbin beat him, and beat him again, and beat him again, and he wasn't unbeaten anymore, Dempsey was just a guy. He wasn't even on TV anymore. He had nothing going on. At least now, he'll actually get some sort of a push. embarrassing as it may be, and he'll actually get over more because of it. They had... This was interesting, the way they're building Eva Marie up. They're really building this up like people are going to be shocked when she finally wrestles on TV. I hope so. I hope that she's going to just blow everybody away. They had footage of her in an empty Full Sail earlier in the day wrestling with somebody, I couldn't tell who it was, while Regal and Sarah Amato, Sarah Del Rey, stood on the apron watching her, talking to themselves and critiquing her work. We didn't see too much out of her. She did maybe an arm drag or something. I don't remember. But the storyline is that they are judging Eva Marie's in-ring skills and debating whether or not she deserves an opportunity to compete on NXT, which, of course, she will. I kind of like the way they're building this up, but I really hope in the end that she just shocks the world, because otherwise it's not going to be good for her. I can tell you that. Especially in that building. Yeah, it's not going to be pretty if she doesn't have anything to show for it. Tyler Breeze pinned Ty Dillinger with the beauty shot. Breeze is just a man with no direction whatsoever. It's a crime. This guy deserves so much better than this. I hope they come up with something for him soon. Or promote him to the main roster. But you know what? I don't have any faith with that character that Vince McMahon is going to look at this guy and go, oh, you know, this is a good guy here. We can really use him in, like, the upper mid-card. No, Tyler Breeze, if he goes to the main roster tomorrow, is going to be tagging with Adam Rose. I don't want to see that. Adam Rose is actually better than what they have him doing, but Tyler Breeze is so much better than that. So I just as soon as they keep him at NXT, but just come up with something for him. It's like I said a few weeks ago, I was always against the idea of introducing a secondary championship on NXT because I don't like having all these different titles, and the NXT roster was never really that big. So having a world champion, a tag team champion, and a women's champion, it made sense. You don't really need more than that. But now the roster is expanding a little bit. NXT is a touring brand now, and you've got guys like Breeze that have nothing going on. So I'd be in favor of introducing a secondary belt. That's why I came up with that whole idea when Dusty died of calling it the Dream Championship and actually naming a championship after him. I'm still in favor of that idea, and I think Tyler Breeze would be a great candidate to carry that belt. Emma had beaten Carmella earlier in the show, and later on backstage, they showed Emma and Dana Brooke admiring the women's championship that was hanging from a locker. Sasha Banks came over and said, "What the hell are you doing here?" One thing led to another. A challenge was issued. Sasha said that she would find herself a tag team partner to take on the two of them. So, hello, Charlotte. Looks like we may be getting the BFFs reunited very soon. And in the main event, Finn Balor and Samoa Joe beat Kevin Owens and Rhino when Balor pinned Owens with the double foot stomp off the top. Perfectly fine to set up the match we saw on the Japan show. Otherwise, not a lot of momentum right now for NXT the way there was like a month or two ago. At least on TV. I mean, the live shows are just killing it from what everybody says who attends. I don't doubt that for a second. The Brooklyn show is going to be a lot of fun. But, you know, week to week, they need to just step it up. Even Joe doesn't feel all that exciting right now, and that music doesn't help. ProWrestlingTees.com is your one-stop shop for all things Sound Off. We've got a ton of different t-shirt designs up there right now, including the official Sound Off logo shirt, the Eat Sleep Sound Off repeat shirt, and original designs as well, like Let Me School You, Son, and It's Not Rocket Science, People. And it's not rocket science that you should go right now to our store, ProWrestlingTees.com/Solomonster Sounds Off, and get yourself a shirt, maybe two. They ship all over the world, so if you are an international fan of the show, fear not, you can get your own Sound Off shirt. You can also pay via credit card or PayPal, whatever works best for you. So head on over to ProWrestlingTees.com/Solomonster Sounds Off. Buy yourself a Sound Off shirt. The next time you go to Monday Night Raw, TNA, Ring of Honor, or just out with the family, you can represent the Sound Off with an official Sound Off t-shirt. Again, visit ProWrestlingTees.com/Solomonster Sounds Off and get your shirt right now. For all of their problems, TNA put on a really good show last Wednesday. They basically took what would have been on their pay-per-view if their taping schedule wasn't so screwed up, and they gave it away for free on Impact. Also, they did it to try to pop a big rating, which not only did they not pop a big rating, their numbers were down almost 30% from the week before. And that's really too bad, because the Wolves and the Dirty Heels had a great 30-minute Iron Man match for the tag team titles. The Wolves won 2-1. Aries and Rude are no more, it appears, as a team, with Aries now gone from the company. I think he signed with some talent agency, so he's doing his own thing. Bobby Roode has been announced as appearing for Global Force Wrestling at their TV tapings on July 24th as part of a one-night tournament to crown the very first GFW champion. It's part of the working agreement they now have with TNA, so Roode is still with TNA, but Aries' contract expired, so he's gone. The belief now is that TNA and GFW, all this stuff that's going on, is building to an invasion angle. An invasion angle. What is there to invade? What is there to invade? You're going to do an invasion angle. You got one company that's got one foot in the ground, one foot in the grave, another company that's barely a company. They don't even have a TV show. And we're supposed to be excited about this invasion. You know what this has written all over it? The Alliance. That's what this has. Or even worse, Aces and Eights. Because that's really all this is going to be. I don't really see where the invasion is coming into play here. I'm not sure who's invading who exactly. This just sounds like a terrible idea. Anyway, the other thing to check out on Impact is the title match between Kurt Angle and EC3. Angle's neck tumor, by the way, since I mentioned it last week, it is benign. He is having surgery shortly, should be back in about a month. Apparently he's had it for a long time, but only now it's starting to cause him some numbness and other problems, so he just decided to go ahead and have it removed. EC3 is the new TNA World Heavyweight Champion. At this rate, he may end up as the final TNA World Heavyweight Champion. I like EC3. You know, he's one of TNA's true few success stories. From the moment he arrived in that company, pushed from day one, still undefeated after what's it been now, 2 years almost? Still unbeaten. You look at their current roster, I'm not even sure who the right person is to hand him that first defeat. The only person who might make sense if they continue to push him as a top babyface is Drew Galloway. But I don't see that happening anytime soon. I don't think it's the right time for that. And who the hell knows how much time TNA has left. I mean, that's something that you would do further down the road. The question is, how much road is left for TNA? You know, they also had another major defection this past week. Their executive vice president, Andy Barton, who had been with the company since day one in 2002. In fact, he had been with Dixie Carter, working for her, dating back to her marketing and PR agency, long before TNA was even a thing. So that can't be a good sign. But it would not be TNA if it did not involve stupid things that were said by various TNA personalities this past week. I may just have to rename the sad tweet segment, "The Latest Stupid Shit Tweeted by TNA." That's what I'm calling it this week. We're going to do it right now. Every week, it's something different. It's a full-blown epidemic with this company. I said it after the Aries tweet a few weeks ago. They need to just revoke their Twitter privileges for their own sake. The problem is, it's not just the wrestlers that are saying dumb shit. It goes straight to the top. But we start with Eric Young. Poor EY. He was probably still on a high from his performance in the King of the Mountain match at Slammiversary when he hopped on Twitter, which was his first mistake. I'm sure he got on there and saw all these different tweets that were probably slamming the show and how bad it was and all the production miscues and just, you know, a bunch of negative stuff. And so he decided to say this to anybody who watched the show and didn't like it. He tweeted, "Real world, if you watched Slammiversary and didn't like it, go fuck yourself. Hashtag pro wrestling. Hashtag proud. Hashtag fifth day. Hashtag team effort. Hashtag crazy psycho." All right, so I added that last one. The dude needs to cool it with the hashtags. Hashtag will wrestle for food is what he'll be hashtagging after September. So then he went on a blocking spree. I said, the state of this company. That's all I said in response to his tweet. I said, the state of this company with a smiley face at the end of it. And he blocked me. I've been devastated all week. I'm trying to pick up the shattered pieces of my life and move on. Surely there must be a support group for people like me, those who have been blocked by Eric Young. He came to his senses later on, or more likely what happened is somebody who works there had enough sense to tell him to take down the tweet, which he did. He replaced it with a nearly identical tweet. This time he left out the profanity and instead he said, "If you didn't like the show, I feel sorry for you." You want to know who I feel sorry for? Eric Young. That's who I feel sorry for. He works hard. He's overachieved his entire career. I'm sure he's under a great deal of stress. Doesn't know if he's going to have a job in a few months. He's a guy I can't see WWE having any interest in him. His own bosses keep him in the dark on things and don't tell the employees anything. He's the one we should all feel sorry for. On the other hand, two people who I don't feel sorry for are Baghdad Bob Ryder and Delusional Dixie Carter. We'll begin with Baghdad Bob, who made an ass out of himself yet again on social media. So I guess the Busted Open guys on their show had one of the senior writers from Pro Wrestling Illustrated on. That was also a story this week, by the way. PWI is apparently dropping the TNA title from its list of recognized world championships. So I'm sure Baghdad Bob was already pretty upset about that. I don't know why. I mean, Pro Wrestling Illustrated hasn't been relevant in years. And I don't have the writer's name in front of me, but I guess he made a comment about how TNA doesn't deserve to survive. Which, by the way, they don't. They don't deserve to survive. And that's not a reflection of their talent at all. It has everything to do with the way the people in charge conduct themselves and the decisions they've made over the years that have led TNA to the point that they're at right now. Many times over, TNA has squandered opportunities that other promotions would die for. Think of all the other like big indies that are out there. They would die to have the opportunities that TNA has had. They would die to have a primetime slot on a network like Spike TV. They would die to have some big-name talent like Kurt Angle. So when I hear somebody say, "I want TNA to die," I don't agree with that. I don't want to see guys out of work. You know, WWE may pick up some, but they're not going to pick up all. Ring of Honor may pick up some, but they're not going to pick up all. But wanting them to die and saying they deserve to die are two different things. The writer is not wrong in saying that. Maybe he said it with glee in his voice. I don't know. I didn't hear the interview, but I doubt he did. The point is, this upset Baghdad Bob a great deal. And the professional that he is. Again, remember, this is a TNA executive. He's not an intern. He's not talent. He has no discernible talent. He is in a position of influence in that company behind the scenes. This is what he tweeted. "Ridiculous that a guy with 282 followers who writes for a print mag with about as many readers got airtime to blast us." And then later on, he said, "Exchanged email with Stu Sachs," who is the publisher for Pro Wrestling Illustrated, "asking him to repudiate comments made by senior writer on Busted Open Radio that TNA does not deserve to survive." Hey, Baghdad Bob, I have almost 11,000 followers on Twitter. Does that make my opinion more relevant than this other guy's because he has 282? Because if it does, I'm here to tell you, he's right. You don't deserve to survive. You know why? Because of people like you. It is impossible to root for a company that is run by people like you who make comments like this. And the sad part is he doesn't even realize that making comments like that does more to hurt his own company than help it. He's just too stupid to realize it. I saw where he also made some dumb comments on that TNA Mecha site. He fits in quite well over there. He answered a question about Ring of Honor and said the TNA has approached ROH many times over the years about doing business together, but ROH was not interested. Is it any wonder why? So then he says, well, maybe we should get aggressive and go after some of their unsigned talent. That would be interesting. That's what he said. Yes, that would be interesting. Hey, Jay Lethal, listen. I know you just won the ROH title and all, but that Black Machismo thing worked out really well for you the last time, so, you know, why don't you come on back? We can't afford to pay you, but the rides outside here at Universal, you could ride them for free. What do you say? I love how ROH turned them down, and so out of anger, they're going to raid ROH of all of its unsigned talent. What is this guy, 7? Act like a moron and say a bunch of stupid shit when you don't get your way. That's what a 7-year-old does. A 7-year-old can do this guy's job. You better hope Dixie doesn't find out. It'll be a lot cheaper for her to hire a 7-year-old. This guy will be out of a job. He'll probably be out of a job soon enough anyway. Which brings us to Dixie Carter. Good old delusional Dixie. At it again. I'm starting to think that when the Death of TNA book is finally written, it's not going to be their inability to properly send emails that proves to be their ultimate downfall. It's going to be their use of Twitter that does them in. Dixie sent a tweet thanking fans for watching Impact. Fourth week in a row since the move to Wednesdays, we've had big +3 ratings gains across the board. +3 is a reference to DVR ratings. It's the number of people that watch a show within 3 days of it airing. Remember, the story is that when Dixie Carter referred to Destination America as a bunch of dummies in that email that she accidentally sent to the head of the network, it may have been in reference to this, to them not acknowledging the fact that TNA had good DVR numbers. That's the story anyway. So in response to her tweet, somebody wrote to her, a TNA fan, wrote to her saying, in all caps, "We love TNA even though it's on a shit network." Now, pop quiz. If you are a wrestling promoter and you have a show on a network, however big or small it may be, you have a relationship with that network and that is where your TV show airs. That is your lifeblood. And boy, are you lucky that that network picked you up because nobody else wanted to. You'd be off the air if it wasn't for this network. And somebody sends you a tweet referring to said network as shit. How do you respond? Do you, A, respond publicly with a smiley face in agreement, or B, not respond at all, even if you agree with them? If you said B, you should be running TNA. Unfortunately, you're not, and Dixie is. So, of course, the answer is A. She responded to the person with a smiley face, and people started to retweet that to the Destination America account. File that one away for chapter 227 in The Death of TNA. What network in its right mind would want to do business with this woman? You know, I said earlier, I felt sorry for Eric Young. You know why? Because he deserves better. That whole roster deserves better. Better management. They deserve so much better than what they're getting here. They go out there, they bust their ass in a Full Metal Mayhem match or a King of the Mountain match or a 30-minute Iron Man match. I think they covered every single gimmick in wrestling over the past few tapings. I mean, they leave it all out there. They're doing everything they can to possibly, you know, put on the best show possible. And it's all for nothing. Because at the same time they're doing that, you've got people in the back making such bad decisions and using such bad judgment. They're actually working against their own talent. That's why I feel sorry for everybody on that roster. You know, and I'm happy for a guy like an EC3 getting a shot, one of the few smart moves that company has made. But I also feel sorry for him, too, because if TNA does go down the tubes in a few months, if that's what happens, you know, it's not fair to him. He's busted his ass. He's worked hard to get to where he is. He achieved some level of success. And then all of a sudden, the company goes down the shitter. What happens to a guy like EC3? I mean, he's talented enough. I'm sure he'll end up on his feet somewhere. Whether that's WWE or not, I don't know. But I feel sorry for everybody. From the top on to the very bottom of that roster, I feel sorry for every single one of those guys because it's not their fault. It absolutely is not their fault. We had another real good hour of Ring of Honor this week that was taped back in May in Philly at the former ECW Arena. They taped this at the War of the Worlds show, so that's why we still have New Japan guys on the show. Gedo and Okada teamed up in the first match against Daniels and Kazarian. Good match, ended with Gedo taking the fall, but Okada showing some of that fine Japanese sportsmanship. Attacked Daniels and Kazarian after the match and gave Daniels the Rainmaker clothesline for the big pop. So I enjoyed that. Main event was AJ Styles against Adam Cole, Cole's first match back since shoulder surgery. They had a hell of a match. Pay-per-view main event caliber on any show for any promotion. Ended with Styles winning with the Styles Clash. Go out of your way to see this. Thumbs way up this week for ROH. They said next week they'll have the fallout from the Best in the World pay-per-view, and Jay Lethal should be on that show. I love how right now your world champions in wrestling are Seth Rollins, Finn Balor, EC3, Jay Lethal, and Ricochet as Prince Puma in Lucha Underground. Not a bad group of talented guys right there. And speaking of Lucha Underground, this was one of the weaker episodes of Lucha Underground this week. Not bad. I mean, again, they have their stories. They kind of flip-flop back and forth. For example, on this show, we went back to the story. We went back to the feud with Delevar, Daivari, and Tejano, neither of which I think have been on the show in 2 or 3 weeks. They go back and forth. So that way, not every single guy is on every single show, like you would see on Raw. Okay, not everybody has to be on the show every single week. So they flip-flop. They go back and forth between stories. Unfortunately, the stuff with Tejano and Daivari, I'm not really a fan of. Tejano finally beat Daivari, which hopefully puts that feud to bed once and for all. Tejano did come back out at the end of the show to assist Prince Puma in the main event. He was defending his Lucha Underground Championship against Chavo Guerrero, who was rewarded with a championship match on this show for what he had done to Black Lotus, basically handing Black Lotus to Dario Cueto on a silver platter. So Dario gave him a championship match, anything goes, and Prince Puma was outnumbered by Chavo and the crew who was out there with him. And so that's why Tejano came out later in the match to even out the odds. Puma did pin Chavo with the 630 splash to retain his championship. El Patron, also on the show, beat Marty the Moth in a squash to make him look strong for his match with Johnny Mundo coming up at Ultima Lucha on August 5th. So, not much else to really talk about here. It was a pretty, you know, basic show, one of the weaker ones, but still good. I wouldn't say, though, Lucha Underground was the best show of the week, as it has been pretty consistently week after week. I'd probably give those honors to ROH, if we're just counting the regular shows and not the Japan show. If we are counting the Japan show, I'd have to put that probably at number two for the week. I really did enjoy that. Let's get to the mailbag and your questions. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. TheSolomonster@gmail.com is always the email address. Cameron wants to know if the EC3 character could work in WWE. Well, you know what? Not only can it work in WWE, you could have the Authority boot out Rollins in favor of EC3 as their new chosen son. He's not as good of a wrestler as Rollins, not even close, but that character, that EC3 character, was tailor-made for a group like the Authority. They could even play off the tweet. Seth Rollins sent EC3 a congratulatory tweet because they worked together, I think back in FCW back in the day. They're friendly. And so that was cool to see him on Twitter congratulate him and tell him to enjoy the moment. If they wanted to, they could even play off that tweet that Rollins sent to him. Now, mind you, I realize that none of this will ever happen because they absolutely do not acknowledge the existence of TNA. I'm just saying, though, you could make it work. Craig, from Chicago, how do you think they are going to set up the Hideo vs. Finn feud later this year on NXT? Since Finn won the belt in Tokyo, which was obviously supposed to be Hideo's spot, they could easily make it seem as if he is jealous of Balor. One way of setting this up is on the second-to-last NXT TakeOver special of the year, Hideo comes out, congratulates Finn on retaining his championship, and then attacks him, finishing him off with the GTS. Hideo could mention in his promo how he brought Balor to NXT and would not be the superstar he is now were it not for Hideo. I think that's a great idea, and I'll do you one better, because I've gotten a lot of questions about this. People thinking maybe Balor's going to be the one to go heel. They reveal that, you know, he was the one who attacked Itami. I would have Itami put the blame on Balor as the person who attacked him in the parking lot, but in reality, he's only saying that as a way to justify his own actions, because he is jealous. And instead, it's revealed that it really was Kevin Owens who attacked Hideo Itami that day, which I think would be more funny than anything else. After all this, it actually is revealed that Owens was the one behind it. It would only make Itami a bigger heel, because then it just proves that he lied, and he only attacked Finn out of pure jealousy. He knew it wasn't Finn. He just used it as an excuse. You know, he lied about him being the one who attacked him. And I like that idea better. I like that for two reasons. One, everyone just assumes, well, it couldn't have been Kevin Owens who attacked Itami because he's going to the main roster and it's too obvious. And he's already denied it anyway because we've never heard of a heel lying on TV before. A lot of times, though, I think people tend to overthink things. Sometimes what seems obvious is obvious for a reason. Everyone is assuming, oh, it must have been Finn. Well, no, actually, it was Kevin Owens. And Owens can even laugh about it after the fact. Now, I'm not saying Owens is going to somehow come back to NXT and factor into the feud. He doesn't have to factor into anything. He's just part of the reveal. We find out that it was him. It could be anybody. It doesn't even have to be Owens. But the point is, we find out it was somebody other than Balor, even though Itami pinned it on Balor, and that just proves that he's a jealous guy. But the other reason I like this is that it allows them to keep Balor a babyface, which I think is the better role for him. There is no way they're going to turn Finn Balor heel before he makes it to the main roster. When he makes the main roster with that entrance and the paint and everything, he's going to be a huge babyface anyway. Why turn him? Why would you turn him heel? James from Victorville, California. Would it make sense for Undertaker to have a retirement match, or should WWE continue to keep his status a mystery? And if he did have a retirement match, who should it be against? I think it would be better for him to state it in advance. Like, this will be my last ride or something to that effect. One last match that you can market the hell out of and really promote, knowing that it's the last time you're ever going to see The Undertaker in the ring at a WrestleMania. As far as who it should be against, well, I mean, it sounds like Vince doesn't want to do Taker against Sting. I saw that report in The Observer. What his rationale is, I have no idea. If it were me, I would do it as a retirement match for both guys, so you have the intrigue of not knowing who goes out a winner and who goes out a loser. But, you know, that apparently is not going to happen. And I have no interest in seeing Kane against The Undertaker again, so the only name that makes sense to me is John Cena. Even though it's a few years too late. The time to do it was when Undertaker was still undefeated. A lot of that drama now is gone. It just isn't there anymore. But I still think it would be appropriate for Undertaker to wrestle Cena in his last match, and it's a match we haven't seen in a long, long... I mean, the last time those two had a singles match, I mean, you'd probably have to go back to 2003, would be my guess. It's well over a decade. And I think the only other time I could even remember them being in the ring together in like a tag team match, because I was at that Raw. They had a Raw at Madison Square Garden, I want to say back in like 08 or 09. And they had this big main event. It was like a six-man tag main event. And I think Undertaker actually laid him out with the tombstone at the end of the show. But that's it. So it would be a fresh match between two of the biggest names that they have. And Cena is always going to get that polarizing reaction. And so even though a lot of that drama is gone, oh my God, is John Cena going to be the one to break the streak? No, it can't happen. You know, that's gone now, but I still think it would be a huge match. And Undertaker should win. I don't think that it should be, oh, the passing of the torch. You know, he lost one time at WrestleMania. He lost to Brock Lesnar. I think Lesnar should remain the only man to beat The Undertaker at a WrestleMania. Now, I mean, he can always claim, Heyman in his promos can always claim, he was the first, he broke the streak, and nobody can ever take that away from him. But I feel like if another person beat The Undertaker at WrestleMania, it does take away a little bit from that. And I would hate to do that. You know, they made the call. I wouldn't have made the same call. I would not have ended the streak. It was Vince McMahon's call. A lot of people disagreed with him. Apparently, Shawn Michaels disagreed with him so much that he said in an interview recently that he walked out when the match was over, which shocked the hell out of me that he would admit that, because Daniel Bryan was a student of his back in the day, and he had to know that Bryan was going to go over and win the championship in the main event, so you walk out? You know, that's a little weird. You walk out of the show without even seeing the main event. So there were a lot of people that were very upset with that call, but, you know, they made the call that they made, and that's that. I just don't think anybody else should ever beat The Undertaker at WrestleMania, and that includes John Cena, but I think that would be the match to do. Corey from Beaver, Pennsylvania. Still my favorite city ever. I've got to head down to Beaver one of these days. Assuming TNA goes out of business between failing to get a new TV deal and not paying talent on time, guys jumping ship, and inept management, which demise would be worse? The way TNA would go under or the way WCW went under? WCW had television until the very end. To my knowledge, they never had a problem paying their talent. But I think it was just as chaotic, if not more so, at the end for WCW. I would say it's more embarrassing for TNA. It's a more embarrassing fall for them. But as far as which demise would be worse, I mean, it's not even close. This isn't even a real question. WCW going out of business in 2001 is the single worst thing that has ever happened to pro wrestling, at least in this country. TNA going under would be terrible for the people who work for TNA, but that's it. WCW going under, I mean, it cost people their jobs. It chased away a certain fan base that never came back. I mean, some of those people were giving it a shot at first when they started to do the invasion angle. And when they saw where the invasion angle was going, they abandoned ship. And a lot of those old WCW, NWA fans, they left and they never came back. They just left wrestling behind and didn't even give it a second thought. So they chased away that fan base. It took away also whatever bargaining power guys in WWE may have had because there wasn't a WCW anymore. It took away their closest competition, which also took away WWE's incentive to compete, which is, I think, largely how we've ended up with the creative system that we have today. So for every person out there who thinks wrestling sucks and WWE sucks, it's so boring, the storylines are shit, you know, part of that is the demise of WCW. Because if WCW, let's say that WCW didn't go under, or let's say they did, but Eric Bischoff, you know, his backers didn't flee, and he bought WCW, I think he was going to buy it for like $75 million, as opposed to the $2.5 million that Vince got it for. And Eric Bischoff, and I don't have a whole lot of faith looking at his track record, aside from a very brief period of success in WCW. I think Eric Bischoff, much like Vince Russo, is one of these guys who people look at as this really smart wrestling guy who could probably run a wrestling company, but yet there's been no evidence of that. Like, Vince Russo is this great writer. Oh, Vince Russo had a few successful years working under Vince McMahon. Show me where Vince Russo has been successful ever since he left WWE. You can't. You can't show me because there is no evidence of that. But they have these reps. That's why they've been involved in wrestling for so long. Up until recently, Russo was still secretly working for TNA. What was that, 20 years after his last stint in WWF? How the fuck was this guy still employed? Eric Bischoff is a very smart guy. Eric Bischoff is a very successful guy in TV doing non-wrestling stuff. He's got his own production company, him and Jason Hervey. And he has a lot of success doing that. Okay, but when Bischoff came into TNA, he didn't do a whole lot of good for them, did he? What evidence has there been that Eric Bischoff can be the savior of wrestling? So now that I think about it, I'm not so sure that WCW would have done all that well even had Bischoff gotten his way and ran the company and kind of restarted it. It may have gone well for a few years, but I don't think WCW would probably be around today. Even if Bischoff would have gotten his hands on it, it probably would have been long gone by now. But once that competition was gone, and WWE didn't feel the pressure of having to compete because they claim they don't look at TNA as competition. Now, that's not entirely true. They definitely keep track of what's going on in TNA and ROH. But I don't think they feel threatened at all by TNA. I believe that 100%. I don't think they have ever felt threatened, truly threatened, by TNA. Maybe there was a guy they didn't want TNA to sign, but being threatened by them, like when TNA went to Monday nights, I don't think Vince McMahon was breaking a sweat because he knew exactly how that was going to end up. So when you take all of that away, that's kind of why we are where we're at right now with WWE. Every now and then it's really good, but for the most part, it's just boring. It's dull. Wrestling, it just hasn't been the same since WCW went away. So I don't see how there could be any comparison at all as far as which demise was worse. It's WCW by far. And we'll end this week's show with a buy or sell. It comes to us from Justin in Michigan. I give him credit because he suggested it. Buy or sell. Bram from TNA? I'm tempted to do it, but I won't. And they call him Cage from Lucha Underground. And Justin says that Bram was in FCW and NXT as Kenneth Cameron. He was part of the Far Better Ascension tag team, but screwed himself by striking a police officer while drunk, got himself released. Thankfully, he got another chance in TNA, and he's doing well. Cage was another guy who was in WWE developmental as Chris Logan back when he was a cruiserweight and was not as physically big as he is now. He was an FCW tag team champ with Justin Gabriel for one measly day, and WWE released him. TNA passed on him too during that stupid gut check gimmick. Now he's wrestling in PWG and Lucha Underground. With both having bright futures ahead of them, who would you buy and who would you sell between the two? Man, that is a tough one. That's really, really tough, which is why I picked it. On the one hand, I look at Bram, who just re-signed with TNA, by the way. I couldn't help myself. Bram is a brawler. He does a lot of weapons matches. He bleeds. You know, all things he wouldn't be able to do a lot, you know, so much of in WWE. I still don't think we've seen his full potential as a worker just wrestling a normal match. I haven't seen too many Bram matches in TNA that are just normal straight wrestling matches. Cage, I had completely forgotten that he was a cruiserweight guy in developmental many years ago. I just completely forgot. But I do vaguely remember him. He was a cruiserweight guy many years ago. You go back and look at him then, I mean, my God, he looks tiny compared to the way he looks now. The fact is, I look at Cage right now, and I love watching the guy work, but there's no way he's passing a wellness test if he goes to WWE. There's no way. And if he gets signed, he's going to shrink. Now, that being said, even if he shrinks, the dude is super talented. I mean, look at the things he does at the size he's at now. Imagine what he could do if he dropped some weight. That might not be the worst thing in the world for him. Although, I do think part of what makes Cage so special is the fact that he is so big, and yet he can still do things that you would never expect a guy that jacked to be able to do. I think that's part of the appeal of the Cage character. Now, if he shrinks, is he as impressive? Because what sold me on Cage was his ring work for a big guy. A few times I've seen him on the mic, which isn't very often, he doesn't really stand out. He doesn't really come off as being anything special. His talking is not his strong suit. With Bram, he's a great talker. The guy is super intense. He brings an intensity that very few people have right now in WWE. I said before, you know, it's a shame he made a stupid mistake and got fired, because had the Ascension been promoted with him in it, eventually he would have become the star of that team, and I think he would have gotten a major singles push. I mean, forget the fact that he's married to Ric Flair's daughter. It doesn't matter. The guy is that talented. And that's important in WWE. His personality is a lot stronger than Cage. But I would argue that Cage is a better worker. You know, he's more flashy. You know, God, you know, it's tough. It's really tough. I'd buy them both if I could. But if I have to pick one, I'm thinking long term here. Who would fit in better? Who has the best shot of being, you know, like a WWE champion one day? I got to go with Bram. And I'm a huge fan of Cage, but I've got to buy on Bram and sell on Cage. And if you have suggestions for buy or sell, keep sending them on in. There were some really good ones. I'll try to do one a week. And try to do it between two people. I think it works better that way. I mean, I may do some buy or sells on individuals, but I think when you have to buy on one and sell on the other, it makes it tougher. So just email your suggestions to me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. And I will consider using it here on the show. You can send all emails to me at that email address. You can also tweet me, @Solomonster is my handle on Twitter, where apparently, according to Baghdad Bob Ryder, if you've only got a couple of hundred followers, your opinion doesn't mean shit. That's the TNA mentality, apparently. You could also check out our Facebook profile page, fan page, and group. The fan page is listed under Solomonster Sounds Off, as the group is as well. And you can apply for membership. You have to be approved. It is a closed group. And also follow us on YouTube. Subscribe to our channel on there, youtube.com/TheSolomonster. Big thanks to TV Tracks, who was back in action on his channel and posting clips of the show. So definitely give him a subscribe as well. And keep supporting the show. The best way to support the show is just to keep spreading the word. Tell friends, family, other wrestling fans of the show if they've never heard it before. And also, you can make a PayPal donation on thesolomonster.com. A lot of you guys did this past week. I can't tell you how much I appreciate that. So make a donation if you'd like. Otherwise, you can also support the show by signing up for a free Audible trial using our URL and cash in. Get your free audiobook. audibletrial.com/Solomonster is our custom URL, or buy a shirt in our Pro Wrestling Tee store. There are 20 of them. And if you do buy one, and when you get it, if you want to, you know, put it on and take a picture, tweet it to me. I'll be more than happy to retweet you and share that with the rest of the world. So lots of different ways to support the podcast and keep it going here as we approach our 8-year anniversary in November. We're going to hit 8 years in November, and I think in September, somebody did the math. As long as we don't miss a show, and I can't remember the last time I missed a show. I've got a little Iron Man streak going here. But I think we're on pace sometime in September to hit 400 episodes, which just blows my mind. So we got a lot of big things coming up here. But we will be back for 391 next weekend of the Solid Monster Sounds Off. You can check us out on thesolidmonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio. Of course, you can also subscribe in iTunes. Be well, stay safe, and we will see you right back here for more Sound Off next weekend. Until then, have a great week, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solid Monster Sounds Off.
You know what annoyed me more than anything else on this show last Monday night? Instead of just calling it Fastlane, they called it WWE Fastlane.
At WWE Fastlane, I'm going to beat you.
Drove me nuts.
You and I are going to have a match at WWE Fastlane.
All night with this. Who talks like that? If aliens landed on Earth and attempted to engage a member of the WWE roster in a conversation, you know what they would think? Holy shit, these creatures are stupid. And then they would exterminate every last one of us.
The Monster Sounds Off.
Since 2007, The Solid Monster Sounds Off. Available at thesolidmonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solo Monsters Sound Off.